commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
And that wraps up today's program. This is Free Speech Radio News. Thanks for listening. In New York, I'm Dorian Marina.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is, it's a minute to 7. I guess we're going to start a minute early with Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, they live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood, but they live no!
Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Gus.
Oh, hi.
Mike.
Hi.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Voltaire.
Hello.
Dotret.
Howdy.
Jim, down in Philadelphia. Oh, sorry, Jim.
Sure.
Down in Philadelphia, Bertie S., how you doing?
Greetings, and I'm glad we have an extra minute tonight.
We do. I would have played a public service announcement, except that computer was taking a long time to get out of screensaver mode. So here we are. A lot of feedback to last week's show where we talked about things we don't usually talk about. And, of course, this week we're going to talk about all sorts of new things that we've never talked about, such as, and this is something that I just found out about today, do you know New York City is getting another area code? Yeah, another area code.
Don't we have enough?
Well, they're leaving it up to us to decide. Yes, off the hook. We get to decide. Our listeners, by the end of tonight, will have the area code picked out, and we will submit it to the people that make area codes. The new area code is what we can wish, can't we? New area codes coming to the city in those boroughs that currently use 718 and 347. So it's not going to affect 212, actually. It's just going to affect those of you in the Bronx and Brooklyn and Queens and Staten Island.
Other borough.
Yeah, it's many people don't even know about 347. People really don't know 347 exists.
Was it here that one of the borough presidents or somebody from an official office said, I don't know about those 347 people. I don't ever feel like they're really part of the town. Like, I remember hearing some official saying that. I was like, ooh.
How do you include 347 people without including 718 people? That's because it's an overlay. It's in the same region. It's not like 347 is Queens and 718 is Brooklyn, which, you know, might make sense now that they have so many of these things. I prefer geographic area codes. It's nice and easy to figure out where people are. Of course, these days, everyone's wandering around with their cell phones. You never know who's calling you from where, and that leads to all kinds of confusion.
Out in Southern California, when we switched over at some point, it was geographic. Like, my prefix changed.
Yeah, but it was an increasingly tiny geographic area. I mean, can you even name all the area codes in the Los Angeles area now? It's 213. I remember when it was just 213. Then it was 818 was the first one.
That was mine, yeah.
Okay, and then after that, that's when it went mad. You had 310, and I think, 562 or something?
928 out there, too, or am I
nine two
I don't
eight.
Even quite remember. Yeah, yeah, there's a couple. There's a bunch.
Used to be, and I knew a couple of people who could do this. You could memorize every single area code in the country, and it was easy to point and say, yes, that's the whole state of Wyoming. You know, and of course, we've told this story before. If there was a zero in the middle, that meant it covered the entire state. If there was a one in the middle, it meant that there were multiple area codes in that state, such as New York, 212-914-516-718-716. They all had ones in the middle. But right. A state like New Mexico, 505, or Hawaii, 808, or Alaska, 907, only one. Yes, Bernie.
It was Mike Juhas, my favorite area code memorizer. He had the whole area code database in his head. It was amazing.
Mike Juhas, my former co-host for The Voice of Long Island on WUSB. Yes. Unfortunately, it's a sad story because today, if you ask Mike Juhas for the to name where error code is, he just starts sobbing uncontrollably because it's impossible to memorize all these area codes because they have no geographic representation. They don't have ones and zeros in the middle anymore. And, you know, this is something I don't want to go off on this tangent yet again. Or my rant, which I always go on, but they could have prevented this so easily if they had simply either introduced four-digit area codes or eight-digit phone numbers. Other countries are able to do this, no problem. Adding a digit makes expansion very simple, and you don't have to have all these ridiculous codes, and it would have been nice to keep the geographic representation. 2121, 2122, 2123 for the 212 area code, or just simply eight digits. Yes, Bernie?
The social implications of this balkanization of area codes really fascinates me because sometimes people are suddenly thrust into a different area code due to no fault of their own, and they're looked at as second-class citizens because they're not in the well-known area code anymore. They're looked at as like a newcomer or something, and I think that's really sad. I think people should be able to demand their area code and keep it. Now there is number portability, so ostensibly someone could, if they were tell me if I'm wrong about this. If someone was assigned a new area code and they didn't like that, could they, and they knew it was coming, could they migrate that area code to a mobile number, and then, you know, because there's number portability now, and then after the cutover, could you, after the, what do they call it when they split area codes? The overlay. After the overlay, could they then migrate that mobile number back to their landline in where they still live?
Yeah, overlay is just when they split it, then it's not geographic. It's simply like 212 and 646 that they're over each other, but 212-718 split. Does anybody remember that when 718 came into existence? I think that was back in the 70s. That's a geographic split.
But would my trick work? Could people theoretically retain their area code where they are if they knew that overlay was coming? They migrated that number using portability to a mobile number or somewhere else, and then after the overlay, then they moved it back to their landline. Would that work?
I'm sure there are all kinds of hacks that people have performed with area code changes. We'd like to hear from them. Write to us, oth@2600.com, if you have a particular trick. By the way, Bernie, maybe you want to give out your personal email address for all our Balkan listeners that you might have offended by calling it Balkanization.
Ernie@2600.com.
Yeah, okay. We're going to be flooded with all kinds of things. .red.
You know, we are just really talking about an archaic thing, because as you know, we're all just going to be using IP addresses with VoIP.
Yeah, I keep hearing this on our Google phones or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, to get back to the original story, New York Public Service Commission says the area code number will be assigned in parts of the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island. Large demand for new numbers expected to result in the depletion of assignable numbers by 2012. So that's only a little over 2 years away. So New Yorkers currently have 718 and 347 will not get a new area code, but newly created phone numbers will. And they say the new three-digit code is not yet known, but will be announced at a future date. But, you know, let's see what's available, and maybe we can request something kind of cool. Gus?
Can I request 133? It's like the beginning of elite,
you
but
you can't
there's
have a
no...
number that begins with 1.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I don't know why that is still to this day.
How about 337, then?
That might be taken, but we should find out. Can someone check on their smartphone to find out if 337 is taken? 337, of course, being what to our non-elite listeners?
Well, it's the back me up here.
No, it
would make sense if you have, you know, the country code in front of it. You have 1337. L-E-E-T.
Yeah,
that would be kind of cool.
That would be kind of cool.
Okay, then you have this other scandal going on. Well, actually... I'm sorry, go ahead, what?
Did it end in gate?
Actually, no, I don't think so. You
know,
but
not yet.
This is a cell phone.
Western Louisiana, just so you know.
Oh, so it is taken.
Oh, man. Western Louisiana isn't elite.
Your email address for the people in Louisiana that are going to email us.
I don't
us
have
now.
A separate one for the... Oh, sorry, Louisiana.
All right, all right. So this is a scandal involving cell phones and senators, yet again, I know. New York Senator Charles Schumer officially apologized today for cursing at a flight attendant. A spokesperson said the senator made an off-the-cuff comment under his breath. How'd they hear it then? When the woman walked away during a recent flight. Now, according to the website Politico, Schumer and his seatmate, you know who his seatmate was? Anybody want to guess?
Bob Saget.
Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods, Bob Saget, no. Why would you say Bob Saget?
It would be a better story that way.
No. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Oh. Did you know the two senators traveled together?
Ooh. So was he cursing her out and not the flight?
Well, you know, it's possible, I suppose, because how do you tell? But
what if that plane crashed? Wouldn't that be like a national security thing?
I think that's not wise. I think senators, there should be one senator per plane. That should be the limit. And just for the passenger's sake and for their sake.
Sort of like having a cat or a dog in your under the seat thing. You only want to have one at a time.
Again, your email address is what?
For all the angry senators who want to write to me today.
All right. Anyway, his seatmate was Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Now, that must be something to have two senators sitting next to each other. What are the odds of them being assigned seats next to each other, too?
Maybe they were traveling together. They had somewhere to go,
what are
like
you
from Washington to New York.
The two senators are traveling together. Wow.
Could happen.
All right. Well, anyway, they were both talking on their cell phones. Wow, it says here that both he and Gillibrand were talking on their cell phones. They were not talking to each other. They were talking on their cell phones. Or maybe they were talking to each other on the cell phones.
Well, once they get up in there, they have no choice but to talk to each other. So if they don't like each other very much, it's while they're on the ground, they have to use every opportunity to talk to someone else.
Maybe they were yelling at their planning staff for getting them to sit next to each other or something. Who knows? Anyway, they were both talking on their cell phones before takeoff when an announcement was made telling all passengers to turn off their phones. Now, according to Politico, Schumer got into an argument with the flight attendant about the rule and then called her an insulting name as she walked away. Schumer said he should not have made the comment and regrets saying the word. So we know it's a one-word comment that was made that's not being said here in this particular news report. But, you know, I wonder how this might have transpired. Does the senator think that the rule doesn't apply to him, or maybe they were saying it way too early when the doors were still open? I think the story begs more details, and we should focus a lot of time on it.
You know, okay. I'm really worried that you just said insulting comment on the air. I think that in our radio archives, we should replace insulting comment with insulting comment.
Thank you.
You know, this entire problem would be solved if they just decided to shield the cabin so phones couldn't send any signals to interfere with anything.
Have we talked about this before, Bernie?
Yes, and there's been all kinds of tests, and they really don't interfere, but there's... You know, just like a one in a zillion chance.
Yeah, but I think what Dara's suggesting is that make it so the phones can't work inside the plane while the plane is sitting on the runway.
Well, I thought he was saying that shield the avionics in the plane from any signals that are in the cabin. That makes more sense to me.
Supposedly they do that already.
Yeah, but if the phones didn't work in the first place, then everybody would be happy. Nobody would be able to speak on the phones, and the flight attendants wouldn't have to yell at anybody.
Supposedly avionics already has, the tech on the plane already has shielding, but, you know, if they're so paranoid about it, if they just shield the cabin so the cell phone signals don't do anything.
It'd still get through the windows unless they put like copper screen on all the windows.
It could be like a microwave, you know, window.
I think a better plan is to just encase our congressman in copper. Go from there.
Okay, that's an idea. Anyway, I do want to find out more details about this because it's a fascinating story. Yeah, I really want to focus an undue amount of attention on this. But then we have another story which is also almost as interesting. A Florida church said a 100-foot-tall cross being erected on its grounds will contain a T-Mobile cell phone tower to boost local reception. Yes, John Sasson, executive director of Epiphany Lutheran Church in suburban Lake Worth, said T-Mobile is building the cross and will... Something funny, Mike?
There's just so many responses to this, but I don't want to have to give out my email address.
Technological advancement here. They will lease a patch of church property as a result to bring a small amount of income to the house of worship. A lot of people don't know our church is here, said Sasson. This is advertising we would not have been able to afford. So imagine that. That's every church could be a cell phone transmitter.
And you just gave them more advertising by talking about this again.
Yeah.
Emmanuel, am I getting this right? The T-Mobile is actually erecting the crucifix?
Well, first of all, let's not call it a crucifix because that's the focal point for the entire religion. So Basically, I think that's what's happening. That's
so there is no separation in this country of church and cell phone carrier.
There never has been. That's a myth. Yes, Rob.
Yeah, I hear they're going to give the large statue of Christ that exists in Brazil, they're going to give him BlackBerry to hold.
I think you might be a little behind on that. I think that happened a few years ago. Okay. Now, I want to, on the other radio show, I was talking about what I was doing for the past 10 days, basically cleaning out a single desk and finding all kinds of interesting tidbits along the way and filling six full garbage bags of pure crap. But I found something before. This is going to get thrown away, but this is something that I was just sitting in the pile, and I thought it might be a little bit apropos for tonight's discussion. It's a newspaper article dated April 25th, 1997, and the article in question comes from the auto section. Autos on Friday is what it was called. And the title is Using Cellular Phones May Add to Road Risks. Yeah. The 1992 Ford Explorer was headed west on Route 25 in Suffolk County, New York. I'm very familiar with that road, the most dangerous road in the world. We're very proud of it. One day in October 1993, when the driver, according to a lawsuit filed later, tried to use the cellular phone installed on the transmission hump. But using it required her to take her eyes off the road, and she lost control, crossing the double yellow line and badly injuring three members of her family driving east on the same road, according to the suit. It seeks $35 million from the cell phone manufacturer, the company that made the mount, and the shop that installed it. That hazard seems obvious, but the real hazard of cell phones may be even simpler and more worrisome. A study published in the New England Journal of Medicine in February, the first scholarly paper to link cell phones and traffic accidents, said that the risk is not just in dialing the phone or even holding it, both of which can be eliminated with the right hardware. The problem may simply be in talking. The study, based on 699 drivers in Ontario, also noted what kind of phone was in use. Telephones that allowed the hands to be free did not appear to be safer than handheld telephones, it found back in 1997. Cell phones may not cause crashes, but talking on one may reduce the ability of a driver to compensate for the mistakes of other drivers, researchers said. If true, that would contradict years of efforts by cellular companies, which have built telephones with speakers and microphones and installed software that allows a driver to speak a telephone number so that a call can be made with only one or two touches of the keypad. The idea that talking itself is a risk seems counterintuitive since people talk in cars all the time. But Gordon Logan, professor of cognitive psychology at the University of Illinois, said that a conversation with someone in the car is different from a conversation on the telephone. Suppose, he said, a driver is talking to his wife while in heavy traffic. If she's in the car with you, she might know there's traffic and lay off. She might know this. She won't necessarily know. She might know there's traffic and lay off, he said. People will be quiet when the driving gets tough, but not if they are on the phone. People talk over citizens' band radios or even talk back to the radio, but experts say they do not get as involved in the conversation as they do on a telephone. Not that the cell phone conversations are long and convoluted, either because of cost or because drivers don't like to talk. The conversations studied by the Ontario researchers were short, with 76% lasting less than 2 minutes. That's definitely dated. An editorial accompanying the Ontario study pointed out that if one car in 10 has a cellular phone by the end of the decade, and if the risk of accident doubles with cellular use, which the editorial said was a conservative projection, then 0.6 to 1.2% of all accidents could be attributed to cellular phones at a cost of $2 billion to $4 billion a year in the United States. So far, no jurisdictions bar cell phone use while driving. Yes, 1997. And experts are not aware of any that even count whether a cellular phone was in use during an accident, though they routinely count other risk factors like whether the pavement was wet or the sun was up. Evidence suggests that most people can handle more distractions as the tasks become more familiar. Logan said that most people can carry out two tasks at once if they use different parts of the brain, like talking and dancing. He suggested... I wouldn't suggest that either. He suggested a test. Try having a friend say words one at a time and repeat them all back. At the same time, type a text into a computer. Most people can do both those tasks at the same time, he said.
Can you do?
Hard.
Yeah, it does seem hard. Even thinking about it seems hard.
I think that may actually be wrong. I thought the cognition said that the verbal center.
This was 1997. People didn't know a lot back then.
Language is still pretty much processed by similar
place,
parts of the,
part
brain.
Of the brain.
And I think many of us have noticed when you're typing and talking, you start typing the same thing you were talking sometimes.
Anyway, try typing what the friend says and speaking what is on the page. You will get lots of interference, he said. Many people can handle two tasks at once if one is predictable, he added. But Logan, who used to live in Ontario, said, when I was in Toronto, I would always predict there would be at least one jerk on the road. But that's not the kind of predictability I mean. Interesting article that I found in the pile of junk from 1997. And it's amazing how now it's pretty much assumed that using a cell phone causes a lot more accidents. And then it was just kind of a theory that, you know, this could be causing accidents, but we're not sure yet. I don't know. Do you think maybe we're putting too much blame on this, or
I think we're putting too much blame on this. You know, conversations seem to be what's distracting, and we can't really get rid of that.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I think the most interesting part of that article was sort of one of the assumptions of the language being used. So they kept saying cars that have a cell phone in them. Can you imagine? Do you remember when your cellular phone belonged to your car? Like it was built into the transmission hub. It was a very, very different thing, and they were huge.
Yeah, that's something else that needs to be taken into account. Is a cell phone today? Everyone knows how to work it. They're much simpler to use. Back then, you need to be practically instrument rated to operate the thing. People weren't used to things like pressing send or end to. It was just a more complicated operation to actually make a cell phone call.
Yeah, it's true. And they sounded better, too, because a lot of them used amps.
I'm not convinced. My phone, I have a new fancy phone, and it's incredibly hard to make a phone call on it. It takes, like, 7 things. You have to open up the dialer program.
I'm glad with my phone. I can just hit dialer, and I just start dialing.
Okay, you know, I got to bring this up, because increasing number of people are getting these smartphones. Three of you in the room right now. You just raise your hand, Gus. You have one too now?
Yeah. Well, is this a smartphone?
Not really. No, that's old.
That's a dumb phone.
No,
what kind of phone is that?
It's a Palm.
Palm. Oh, yeah, it's old.
It's older than SparkTouch.
Yeah, but the thing is, it seems to be harder than ever to communicate with people, especially not just because of the smartphone, but because of just the way people communicate these days. You know, there are people who do not send email anymore. They only send Facebook mail. I find that occasionally when I check my Facebook mail and I find all these messages from people that I haven't read in months because they send it only then. They don't read their email. They're just trying to communicate with people. Over the last week, I've run into all kinds of different challenges. People who only tweet. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying there are people who tweet, and you're supposed to read that. You're supposed to pay attention to everything that's going on in their life to see what's appropriate for you. And email is something that less and less people seem to be communicating with. Phone calls. People don't know phone numbers anymore. Do you know your home phone number? A lot of people don't.
A phone in my home? Why would I want one of those?
Those of you who know my phone number, do you actually know my phone number, or do you just know position 6 on a phone, or do you just know my name on a list? You know, these are serious issues. I think it's getting harder to communicate now with all these devices than easier. I mean, Mike, you were just saying how hard it is to make a phone call on your phone.
Well, that's why I don't drive, so I can make a phone call at any moment.
A single button on my phone, my old phone, and it works. You know,
I don't know about his phone, but my phone is easier. I can just literally start dialing a number, and it'll ask me if I want to dial that number, and then it'll make the phone call for me.
Okay, now what if you lose your phone? Can you dial that same number from memory? Are you able to do that?
Well, see, it doesn't matter because it's backed up online.
Okay, what if the internet goes away? What if you don't? What if you're in the middle of a desert?
If the internet goes away, chances are phone calls don't work either.
No, that's not true. You really believe that?
My phone doesn't work in the middle of a desert.
Okay, but the payphone does, all right?
And payphone? The what?
Yeah.
There is a payphone, but in the middle of the desert out in California, although I think they actually finally
they took that one away.
Oh,
yeah,
I wanted to go.
But the thing is, there are phones all around the world that are not cell phones, and I just wonder, how prepared are we to actually use something beyond what we're carrying with us all the time?
I'm sorry, I can't get exercised about this, because this is sort of like what-if scenarios. I am more upset by the fact that most people don't understand that they don't understand a URL. Like, they don't understand how a URL works.
They don't know
how it's related to ownership. They don't know how it's related to an IP address. They don't know that there's numbers involved in it at all. That bothers me.
Wait,
because I'm seeing...
be specific. What is it exactly that bothers you about...
The fact that people don't know what a URL is.
People don't know how anything works. I don't consider...
What do you mean they don't know what a URL is?
They don't know. They literally are not, like, people are navigating to web pages without ever having to type .com or .org or anything like that.
What are they typing then?
They're typing things into search engine boxes, because increasingly browsers have a search box.
Okay, but all right, fine. So people aren't typing suchandsuch.com. Instead, they're clicking on a link. But so what?
Not necessarily clicking on a link. I mean, this is the thing is, once we lose track of what a URL is, we lose track of who actually owns the page, because the URL is what you use to
don't
go...
Don't you see that on top of it and you finally arrive at the page?
No, but a lot of people aren't paying attention to that. A lot of people aren't. And if they are, you know, they don't know how to, for example, take that, go to Internex Who Is and say, you know, who owns this website? And that's really important. For me, like, that's an important literacy issue that we're not paying enough attention
to. But, I mean, that, it's an easy thing to do. You simply look at the top of the page and see who runs the page, or you have somebody tell you, by the way, did you know that that's owned by Fox? And, you know, I just think not knowing, I mean, I've had instances where people I know were not able to call their parents because their phone broke and they didn't know their own parents' phone number because it was only a memory position on the phone. That's insane when we are relying on technology to that degree where we don't even have the information in our heads.
Would it make you happier if I got my ham radio certification to back up on that?
I'm sure it'd make Bernie happy, wouldn't it?
I'd be very happy if you did that, Doug.
Yeah, I bet ham radio people, I bet, memorize all those numbers and frequencies and everything.
No, see, you don't see where this whole cloud computing / smartphone thing is going.
Yeah, you've mentioned cloud computing, right. So explain the cloud computing premise to our listeners.
See, well, cloud computing is basically where your computer isn't really doing most of the work, but it's actually being done. Say, for instance, if you're using Google Docs, they're the ones that are holding the document and doing all the
holding
stuff
the document, holding your mail, holding your phone messages, holding everything.
In contrast to you, say, having Microsoft Word.
Everyone
on your
should
computer.
Use technology exactly the way that I used it when I graduated from high school.
Amen.
How was that?
A dumb terminal?
What?
How did
what?
You use it when you graduated from high school?
I don't know. It was a long time ago.
That was a rhetorical statement,
but
I think.
What I was trying to simply point out.
Oh, so wait. You're saying, hold on. You're saying that I'm not with the times.
No,
I'm not
saying,
moving ahead
I'm
fast enough by buying into this Google crap.
I'm saying that these, like, silly arguments about people not knowing phone numbers or people not looking at URLs or people don't know how anything works. I don't know how anything works.
I'm not saying not knowing how it works. I'm saying not having the information, not knowing people's names, not knowing, you know, when certain things happen.
What's
unless
your name?
Yeah, exactly.
No, what is it?
the fact that I don't even know my own name. Go
this,
ahead.
This kind of information that you're talking about only matters in the current system we have. As we move towards this more cloud computing style thing, instead of people needing to know numbers, they'll simply have it on some account. Like, for instance, with Android phones, you have it on Google servers. So if payphones, some form of payphones still exist, you would likely have some sort of thing where you'd use your account's information and bring it out, or access it off someone else's phone.
But
so if your phone breaks, you simply pull it off on another phone and make the same phone.
Okay, but telephone numbers are just one example. I'm talking about every bit of information about somebody's likes and dislikes, somebody's address, all kinds of things that you only have stored in a file and that you don't really remember in your head.
Right. Well, stepping back one, this is what you're talking about with if the cloud computing suddenly is the only place where we know, where we have the knowledge of what a phone number is, that's more or less the same thing as not knowing URL. Like, we don't have the information. We just have a pointer that says, that goes to Mom and that goes to Jamie or whoever, you know, right? So that is that is sort of de-skilling us. We're less knowledgeable. We don't memorize things. And, you know, actually, people have been complaining about the loss of memory since Aristotle or whoever was complaining about kids using the alphabet.
I was about
to
bring that up.
But the thing is, I do think it de-skills us. We lose those skills, and that is probably an important thing. But
I don't think we really ever I don't think it's any different than in the past. I don't think any older person remembered every address they would send mail to. I think that they would just have an address book.
Good point.
And it's the same thing with DNS. It's just nobody remembered the IP address of the website they were going to. They just expected their DNS server to direct them to the right place. It's just one more level of arbitration, but it's still pretty much the same theory behind it.
So, Emmanuel, what if somebody set your phone book on fire?
I don't have a phone book.
I know, that's the
I've
thing.
Never had a phone book.
But a lot of people do.
You memorize
yeah.
all the phone numbers you needed to know.
The
and
ones I need
to
know, yes. The thing is, I don't need to know that many. I just need to know.
Okay,
I need to
know
how to
go.
Call my own home, the people that are close to me. I need to know where certain things are. And, yeah, there's some things, obviously, I store on computers or, you know, written down someplace. But I'm just saying, we rely too much these days to keep everything that we own in devices. And that's also a security risk when we lose the devices, because all that information is also compromised. And I see this happening, people on their Facebook accounts, when their Facebook account gets hijacked, all their friends, they get crazy email that allegedly comes from them. And so all this information that used to be just, you know, between you and the person you were friends with is known to the entire Internet.
Another major point is that there's just such a huge volume of information nowadays that you have to remember. You go back 10, 20 years, there was maybe one phone in a household, possibly two.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, everyone in that household has their own cell phone, their own web address, mm-hmm. their own Twitter page, their own Facebook, their own whatever, and you have so many pieces of information about every single person you need to stay in touch with.
Dare I say also, phone calls meant more back then, because when the phone rang, it was considered to be an event, and you actually talked to somebody on the phone. Now phones are ringing all the time on trains, on cars, you know, in the street. We're always on the phone, and we're talking to each other in person less and less. You know, how many times have you been in a place where you're sitting with all these people with smartphones, and everyone's just looking at their screen, and no one's talking to each other, even though they're all sitting together, and they're tweeting that they're sitting next to each other, but they're not talking to each other.
I've got a great idea. Why don't we charge $1 a minute for phone calls? Then no one will make phone calls except when it's really, really important. I think the world will be much better.
Okay, well, you can try to get that passed through legislation, Walter.
I do agree about the phone calls that it can be very annoying to getting phone calls like 24/7 and when a simple text could do. But I on the other point, I think that it's kind of like a Luddite argument about the
I knew someone was going to say
true.
Luddite.
What if your address book got burned? It's no different than your phone getting
burned.
It's
very different.
At least you can back up your phone's address book, and most people do, whether it's through Facebook or whatever. But and Facebook has backups, and I hope people back up their emails and stuff like that. We can't back
an
up.
An exercise. Let's do without our phones for a week, see how long we last. I bet a lot of us couldn't make it
through.
Okay,
let's do without our address book.
I don't even have an address book, so
exactly.
That's a good argument.
Because you have phones nowadays, and you have technology.
See, I don't even see how this argument of people knowing how to call someone or not having to call someone matters if you're trying to talk about how things used to be. There once was a time when people couldn't call anybody. You had to pick up the phone, talk to the operator, and the operator would have to figure out which plugs go into which sockets.
Uh-huh. And people used to write letters to each other, too, and they were good letters. They were good letters. Some of the things I found in my desk when I was cleaning it out, people used to write to each other, you know, pages and pages. Now it's two lines, and it's illiterate, and it's all misspelled and with numbers in it.
But .ret makes a good point. Like, the responsibility for making that connection was different back then. It was a matter of, like, it was thought, maybe it was thought even that people weren't smart enough to do the, like, figuring out where things needed to be connected, or maybe all that stuff needed to be centralized. Maybe we're just going back to an operator system where there's a central knowledge point of all the places where things need to go.
These things do move in circles, I'll say that. So we're probably going back to something like that.
Let's, you know, move on.
Yeah, let's move on to something even more controversial. Last week we talked about, okay, we have this email here. That someone said we got a few pieces of email, not very contentious ones. We were talking about the climate change, global warming thing. Yeah, I know it's not really our expertise, but we were talking about the leaked emails. I'm not going to say hacked emails because they were leaked emails. Somebody broke into a computer and exposed all these emails. We were talking about that. We were trying to explain scientific theory and various things like that, and met with a mixed response. But this was a pretty straightforward response. I think that someone wrote into us. Saying the global warming scare is a combined result of computer models trying to answer why climatological temperatures have increased and egoist scientists watching too many Godzilla movies. Whatever the answer is, it will include the fact that the polar ice caps on the planet Mars are melting also. After listening to you defend man-caused global warming, I better understand why Mao rounded up guys like you and put them on turnip farms. And I believe, Gus, you had the best way of summarizing this.
Did I summarize it as why are we giving the fruit bats any attention whatsoever?
Well,
fruit bats or moon bats we're dealing with here?
Mars bats.
Well, you just listed some of the key words in there, such as Godzilla and Mars.
And egotist. And, yeah.
And turnip farms and things like that. And
communism.
Yeah. So what was that, Bernie?
Tinfoil hats.
Tinfoil yeah. Hats. Well, he didn't mention that specifically, but thanks, Jay, for your thoughts there. And it's amazing how strongly some people feel that they're being hoodwinked completely by the scientific community. But you know, I don't believe in blindly following anything, as I think I'm pointing out with technology. But you do have to sort of respect people who have spent their lives researching things and not simply assume that there's a whole big X-Files conspiracy going on all the time. Maybe sometimes, but not all the time. What do you think?
I completely agree with you. The point that I continue to try to make over and over again about this sort of thing is, you know, it's not like you can have some scientific community that pulls the wool over everyone's eyes. You're talking about a worldwide collection of just any companies, universities, and institutions that participate in the scientific method, pretty much.
That's sort of an interesting point, too. It's like, I mean, think about who is going to tell you the full truth about things. Companies have non-disclosure agreements, right? You're not supposed to talk about what goes on within a company. Science, in general, Scientists talk to their students. They talk to other people at conferences. They're about sharing information. So if you're going to blame one group about being secretive and not telling you things, scientists aren't the first ones that come to mind, necessarily.
All right. Now, what we have here, we mentioned the leaked emails. What we have are basically just a couple of highlights from the leaked emails specifically. And I believe Dotret, you're going to sort of explain what these, unless you believe Dotret's part of the conspiracy, what this actually means and why it is or is not a smoking gun insofar as exposing the hoax of climate change and global warming and all that. Now, remember, what happened was the emails from East Anglia University in England was hacked or leaked or whatever. And basically this communication between scientists was exposed, and some people are pointing to that saying this is proof that there's a big cover-up going on. Let's listen to what they actually said and see if there is a cover-up. Okay, this is from the email of Phil Jones of November 16th, 1999. You paying attention, Dotret? You're on your smartphone.
Yep.
Okay, good. I've just completed Mike's nature trick of adding in the real temps to each series for the last 20 years, i.e. from 1981 onwards, and from 1961 for Keith's, to hide the decline? My goodness, what are they talking about? Hiding decline? Tricks? I thought you were going to speak, you know, from your head. I got to read the piece of paper.
I don't remember all the points. That's why I would need to see them for a second. Okay, well, all right. Well, first of all, the first thing to point out is trick. That's the first thing that'll pop out in someone's head is, you know, to most common people, trick means, you know, pulling something over someone's eyes, you know, hoodwinking them or whatever. In the scientific community, quite often in the scientific community, whether you're talking about climate research or even computer science, mm-hmm. it means a clever way of doing something. So,
that's the scientific term?
Sorry, say that again?
That's the scientific term is trick?
I think that's a human term.
More of, yeah.
Yeah. So let's not describe it to. It's jargon, and it's jargon, but it's not science-specific jargon. No. Anybody could use the word trick.
All right. Well, right. I think that's what we're saying.
Well, that's good. All and they were talking about
hiding the decline.
Yes, the decline. They weren't talking about the decline in temperatures. They were, again, this is being taken out of context. They were talking about the decline of basically what's called proxy data. Proxy metrics.
Okay.
They were looking at, we look at other data like tree rings or ice core samples or whatever as additional ways of looking at what was going on in the environment. And this is especially useful for times when we didn't really.
So they're talking about a smaller.
Right. And what happens is during after 1960, there's a divergence between the proxy data and our actual measurements of the atmospheric temperatures.
Okay.
So what they were talking about is a method of avoiding this problematic data, which they don't understand how it works.
But using the word hiding,
it's probably just a bad choice of words.
Okay. But doesn't to you suggest a vast conspiracy? Rob, how about you?
The thing is, you call it a poor choice of words, but this wasn't meant for public consumption. This was two guys who worked together talking to each other, and anyone who works with anyone, they develop their own sort of rapport, and they know what each other are talking about, even when it might not be clear just by looking at the text.
Yeah, you can see the choice of words I use sometimes communicating with people. They'd really be taken out of context.
They do.
All right, let's look at another email from March 11, 2003. I think we have to stop considering climate research as a legitimate peer-reviewed journal. Perhaps we should encourage our colleagues in the climate research community to no longer submit to or cite papers in this journal. The controversy there was that people were saying that climate research wasn't legitimate.
The first second you hear that, you might think, "Oh my God, they're talking bad about climate research." But anyone who looks at that realizes they're saying shouldn't be considered a legitimate peer-reviewed journal.
Yeah, it says right there, journal. So they're talking about a journal named Climate.
Exactly. There's actually a journal there. Research. And I forget who wrote that email. You have the paper. But he defends, you know, saying he viewed this journal as an activist.
Michael Mann of Pennsylvania State University wrote this.
Yeah.
I feel bad reading it. It's a private email, but okay.
It's
so
not
he's saying
anymore.
He's saying that this particular journal isn't very good or something
climate.
Like that. I guess he's entitled to that opinion. All right. Here's something else. Also, this is an email from Phil Jones to Michael Mann, dated July 8th, 2004. The other paper by MM, which maybe it's
I forget the names of who...
It can't be Michael Mann. You wouldn't be referring to him in the third person like that.
Two people, I forget what their names are. They wrote a paper. If you want, you can check the Wikipedia on that.
It really doesn't matter who they are. The other paper by MM is just garbage. I can't see either of these papers being in the next IPCC report. Kevin and I will keep them out somehow, even if we have to redefine what the peer review literature is. My goodness, what kind of subterfuge is going on here? That's that sounds really sneaky and like they're covering things up. What do you think?
Well, first of all, you know, they as far as we know, nothing has been deleted. But what they were talking about, let's see.
I thought you had this in your head.
That's why I needed the paperback. But no, the papers they were talking about are. We're cited and discussed in Chapter 2 of an IPCC report, was it AR4, and, you know, there is some looking into this to make sure that no one is messing with the system in a way that it shouldn't be, but this stuff has already did come out in the paper, and this sounds like, you know, a tongue-in-cheek sort of thing, you know, just like somebody saying, I'm going to, you know, be working on this all day, even if I have to make day last longer. They're talking about something that's impossible to change.
Uh-huh. Okay, I just want to read one more so we can move on to something else. The fact is that we can't account for the lack of warming at the moment, and it is a travesty that we can't. So what exactly is it that they're
And the funny thing is, again, we already talked about that before. It's the proxy data. They can't account for that specific data for that 20 years. And he's just using exaggerations. He's calling it a travesty. Mm-hmm. But that guy actually made a reference in another paper of his, which you can actually read, where he was talking about that, and he was referencing that in his email. He was just very aggravated about better forms of measuring tech.
Okay, well, speaking of emails that have been uncovered, millions of missing Bush emails have been found. Computer technicians have found 22 million missing White House emails from the administration of President George W. Bush.
No, they knew how to use words that well.
How could they write so many emails? My goodness. The Obama administration is searching for dozens more days worth, that's it, of potentially lost email from the Bush years. I think it's kind of cool that the Obama administration is trying to find the emails from the Bush administration. That tells me that something's going on there.
They're probably wanting to see how Bush hid his emails so that when they hide their emails, they do a better job.
Well, that's not too hard to do. I think any second grader can probably do a better job of that.
22 million they just found. They've been missing all this time.
22. Can you imagine what's in there? Now,
most second graders can't even count to 22 million.
I've heard that they're not sure if they can even recover them all because they're too expensive to... Is that right, Bernie?
I've been hearing mainstream media news reports in like NPR and other outlets that they may not be able to recover all 22 million because it's too expensive to do that. They're all jumbled together, and like, how much could this possibly cost? I mean, get real. How much do we spend on our country spend on other stuff? How much would it cost to recover 22 mega emails?
Well, I understand where the cost even lies. What is it you're paying money for to simply?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they have to be parsed or something. But it can't possibly cost a fortune to do this compared to all the other money that's spent in government for billions of other things.
Plus, if they've already found them, then they're already there.
Are they wiped drives? Because if they're wiped drives,
they found the data. But it says supposedly, according to some reports, that they're jumbled all together now. So. Whatever that means.
That's just the Bush way of speaking. I think that's what they're referring to.
I think the Obama administration does deserve some credit for this, but let's not forget that they spent the good first 9 months of their term in office trying to fight this in court and stuff against the efforts of the EFF and others.
What, the Obama administration was fighting uncovering Bush administration emails?
Yeah. Their Justice Department was filing...
No, I think they were fighting to keep their own secrets. I think that's what they're
trying
to do.
No, they were fighting to keep
do.
The former Bush administration's stuff secret so that they could keep theirs as well. But they were
and now they've changed their minds and they want to find all the secrets, is what you're saying.
I'm not sure I gather the details, but I know that they were previously fighting this.
All right. Rob.
I know that data recovery is an industry and it can get expensive, like if your hard drive gets erased or something and you need to get that data back. But I also know that there are probably very many people in this industry who would like to get a look at this and help the effort out and maybe give them sort of a discount.
Yeah, definitely. People we know, I think, would like to do that.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Wired.com estimated the cost of this to be, I think it was a few million dollars. It wasn't anywhere near what we're spending on war and other things.
Still, just to well, there are 22 million emails. So
yeah, but what does it cost to uncover one email? Well, does it really cost a whole dollar to uncover an email?
What if we each sponsored an email and we paid a dollar for that email?
Yeah, well, someone sponsored
and that's our email from that point on.
If they really are all jumbled together, chances are they need to have a human read through it and separate out what belongs to what email, what belongs to another email, and that might just take a lot of man hours.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we have some other interesting bits of information. For instance, this story that I know, Bernie, you're very taken with. An FBI security officer who videotaped teenage girls as they undressed and tried on prom gowns at a charity event has been convicted of invasion of privacy. However, his sentence of 6 months in jail was suspended, and instead a year of probation was imposed upon him. What do you think of that, Bernie? Is that a fair outcome?
Well, we talked about this when the charges were first filed several months ago. We talked about this on the show, and we were speculating, I believe, that had these been recorded, then that would have been child pornography, and you know, people get decades in prison for possession of such pictures. Yet this FBI guard apparently was viewing people who were minors in changing and in changing rooms illicitly, and he gets a suspended sentence because he works for the FBI apparently, because any non-FBI perv, I'm sure, would have done time for this. So I just have a real problem with this double standard.
I think the morals to take from this is not that the FBI should have been in more trouble. The agent should have been in more trouble. I think the lesson to take away is that we shouldn't have such puritanical beliefs and draconian punishments for anybody that's caught with pornography of 17-year-olds or something like that.
If we're talking about somebody spying on people changing in a fitting room, I think that definitely should be some kind of penalty for doing that.
Definitely, but I mean, there certainly is a double standard with the him working for the FBI. But
if anything, somebody with authority should have more of a penalty because they've abused that authority and that level of trust.
But it also goes to put into perspective as Bernie said, when people have like one single image, we shouldn't have such draconian punishments.
Well, there are some insane laws. Yeah, like people simply having images on their computers are treated with the same fervor as somebody who actually has hurt somebody physically. It's nuts sometimes.
Well, I think the moral of the story is if you want to be a pedophile / perv that wants to watch people, join the FBI, and there you go.
Well, that sure sounds simple.
And leave America because we're Puritans.
That's yeah. Okay, we have this interesting piece of email somebody sent to us. And by the way, we should take phone calls. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. Hello, guys. I am writing to see if you have heard of this scam on Craigslist. The way the scam works is you respond to some too-good-to-be-true ad, and the person who posted the ad emails you with his contact number. You are instructed to call him at the number or a secondary number that he supplies. When you call the number, you get a voicemail box or no answer. Next thing you know, you're being charged $10 for a one-minute call, and the place listed on your bill is a company called Easy Number. This is exactly what happened to me, but to my surprise, when I called Verizon, I was told that they cannot credit me for the call and basically told me to stop calling 900 numbers. But I didn't call the 900 number. This number is an area code 908, which is New Jersey. It's a legitimate New Jersey area code, and I tried telling the representative it was impossible for anybody to tell if they're calling a scam number. They told me I could elect to have a block put on my phone, which would give me an announcement when the number is a 900 number, which, of course, it's not a 900 number, so that doesn't really help at all. They should have had a block or message alert for this number in the first place. And second, I think Verizon is complicit in allowing people to be ripped off, which leads me to my next point in question. Can you guys, off the hook, organize a class action lawsuit or direct me to an agency that can start a class action lawsuit against Verizon and or the person who is posting these numbers? There are at least dozens, if not hundreds, of people who have been ripped off by this company. The worst part of it is Verizon apparently is giving them the go-ahead to continue to rip people off. By the way, the actual number is in the 908-554 exchange. And what this basically is, this is what's known as pay-per-call. And it turns out, do you guys know here in New York what the pay-per-call exchanges are? Rob, do you know?
No.
No? Mike? No? Jim? Nobody knows. Wow. Okay, I can tell you from memory that 976, obviously, 970, 540, and 550. And there might be another one now, but those are the ones that have been in existence for decades. But in New Jersey, it's 976, 940, 915, 556, 554, and 550. Only two of those are the same as in New York. And 556 is the exchange for the New York Times here in New York. So it's very, very confusing because, yes, what this person did was they called a premium number. Maybe you can only call it within New Jersey. I'm not going to dare try calling from outside of New Jersey and see if I get charged for that. I think you do get charged, though. Are we expected to memorize all the exchanges in every single area code that might charge extra? It's a real scam.
If I had a list on my telephone, I could program my telephone to automatically notify me.
Yeah, I'd like to see you pull that off.
Smartphone, we can do it.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. That's your assignment. I want to see. By next year, I want to see you pull that off.
Give me the list. It's
the list doesn't exist. I even went to Wikipedia and asked them, and they don't know.
Well, that's the hard part, getting the list.
You get me the list. I'll do the blocking.
Get your smartphone to get you the list. See how easy that is. But the point is, this is how people. Yes, Bernie, go ahead. What are your numbers down in Philadelphia? Do you know what they are?
Off the top of my head, there's like 900, 976, 540.
The whole 900 area code is not what we're talking about. We're talking about local numbers. Numbers that charge
you. You mean exchanges?
Yes, exchanges.
I don't know.
Yeah.
What is the purpose of these exchanges except to rip people off unawares?
Well, you know, sex lines. You're lonely late at night. You want to call for some company and pay $10 a minute for this. It's your right to do that. But, you know, they put it in a special exchange. The problem is the exchanges aren't universal. They're different for every area code.
But why, if I were operating a legitimate pay-per-minute company, why would I prefer one of these crazy numbers over a 900 number except to catch people unawares?
Maybe that's the reason. Well, 900 numbers, people... they kind of avoid those, yeah, for the very reason indicated.
The person who sent us this didn't say what exactly the deal that was too good to be true was.
Well, I don't think that's really important. Is it something on Craigslist that makes you want to call?
If it's
right?
Something that was too good to be true, don't give the number.
Well, it doesn't
well,
have to be too good to be true.
There are deals out there, you know. Sometimes you do find a good deal. Sometimes
it could just be simply something simple as, if you want to buy this or you want this job, call so-and-so.
Well, in any event, I think it's up to the phone companies to take the lead on this. And make sure that anybody who asks for credit for such a number is given credit if it's not obvious to them that this exchange is going to charge them a huge amount. It's entirely possible. Bernie.
I believe that all local exchange carriers should use an opt-in program for this. But
right.
if you want to opt in to be able to do these pay-per-call calls, you would have to specifically request the ability to do that. And then it's on you. But even more so... What's really even more disturbing that the phone company isn't doing is they're not making it really upfront to people that the local exchange carriers get a cut of the profits of calls to these numbers. So it's not that perhaps that's why it's not an opt-in system, because Verizon and other local exchange carriers get a piece of the action when somebody gets ripped off this way.
Well, what I was going to say is now, while it might be hard for people to remember all these numbers, someone could try compiling a list of whatever exchanges are the ones that you have to pay for, and sites like Craigslist and other listing sites could have red flags for if somebody's trying to use that as a contact number.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take some phone calls now, 212-209-2900. Let's hear who's out there. Wow, dial tone's out there. That's what we get for criticizing the phone company. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I'm wondering if I can tell by looking in my computer somewhere if I've been hacked.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting question. What exactly do you mean by hacked?
Seven of my emails are missing, and I went on to a Google group that's open all the time. You don't need to be a member to look at it, and it recognized my email address. And I had gone on there numerous times, and it was no problem. And then just for a second, it said the owner has banned you from the group. And then when I went back to it, it didn't anymore.
Uh-huh. Do you know who the owner of the group is?
Yes.
And did you ask the owner?
No.
Oh, well, maybe that's the first step to do that. Go ahead, Walter.
I wouldn't take anything too seriously. I know that Google Groups has just recently the whole Google Groups like project has been changing a lot. Like Google has changed the back end, so there's probably a lot of just goofy stuff going on. But it's probably not too serious.
When you say your emails are missing, though, are you able to check the trash, see if they're in there? Because most of the time, this is some kind of user error when things disappear.
Okay, I'll definitely check that. But the 7 emails that are missing are all related to one issue.
Uh-huh.
Well, what client is it?
Good point.
You know, is this being stored on the computer? Is this being stored on Gmail?
It's email.
Okay, in Gmail, you definitely want to check. There's a folder called All Mail, which is different from the inbox,
mm-hmm.
But it's it will have everything in it, and especially if it's all related to one topic, it's quite likely that somehow things have gotten shifted over there, or into the spam account, too. I mean, spam filters change.
Yeah, you can
too.
Delete things very quickly by accident. Rob?
There's also, if they're very old emails, I actually had a friend of mine who was saving certain emails for years and years. They were from someone who passed away, and the email ended up deleted because it just got lost somewhere in Google's system. And that goes back to what we were talking about the fact that something like Gmail is remote. It's not controlled by you, and it really is not something I think to depend totally on.
Okay, final point out there. Let's move on.
And to that point, since you're talking about something like Gmail, your computer doesn't have to be hacked. Someone could just simply get your password.
Yeah, hacked is really a word that's overused for anything that goes wrong with a computer. Thanks for that question. Interesting. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, guys, great show. Very intelligent.
Well, thank you.
There's a lot of things you mentioned, but one, quickly, I had an email come up that said http://something-else, and the acronym for URL is not knowledge to me, but I'd be appreciative of enlightening it. The other thing is, though, that aircraft thing, how come they can't test it if they have – how come we don't know the science behind something that could be so crucial to the communications of a pilot? I mean, you can understand the severity of something like that potentially happening, but why can't we just don't have the money to do test runs, or it's too dangerous? I mean, if they don't have communications, it's not like the plane is going to crash.
Okay.
I have a theory on that.
Go ahead, Bernie.
One theory is, have you noticed that there already are telephones on airplanes that cost like $2 a minute to make calls? I think it's not in the airline's best interest to allow you to use your own cell phone on their aircraft when they can charge you, you know, several dollars a minute to use their phone. So I think there's a lot of politics involved with the airlines and the FAA and why this hasn't been allowed yet, but I would think that money has something to do with it.
Now as to the URL part of the question, if you see something that says http://whatever, that is a URL. For instance, http://www.google.com. URL is basically what's known as a universal resource locator, and it's what's designed for people to find something on the web using, yes,
all right.
That's pretty much what it is.
Great. Now let's take one more phone call, because that's all we have time for. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello?
Speak up. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. You guys were talking earlier about that climate change.
Oh, yeah.
One of the reasons that I'm skeptical, and a lot of other people, they just don't buy it, is a few years back when they had that whole scam about the ozone layer, and it turned out that it really wasn't an issue when it was all said and done. Climate might very well be changing.
Wait, when was that concluded that the ozone wasn't an issue? The ozone...
Well, is it an issue?
The hole over the Antarctic and all that? Well, you know, this is really not our field of expertise, admittedly. But, you know, it's basically what we're saying here is that simply assuming everything is some kind of a conspiracy and everything is, you know, a lie being perpetrated by some central authority, that's something you have to look at very closely and see.
Well, a lot of people aren't saying that. What some people are saying is that, yes, the Earth might, the climate might very well be changing, but it doesn't mean that we have to redistribute wealth. That's two separate issues.
And who's talking about redistribution of wealth?
I mean, it's two separate issues. I think that bound is being leaped upon by lots of people.
The one point I really want to make about any of these issues, climate change, ozone, whatever, is that the science, the data is out there, and anyone has the opportunity to educate themselves on what all this data actually means, look into them for themselves, draw their own conclusions.
Yes, exactly.
Or go to people they trust and see what they think. And
okay.
Don't take anything as gospel, whether it's from us, from some scientist, from anyone. Go find out for yourself.
Mike, final word.
With the caveat that education is an actual process, and you can't just look at one spreadsheet of raw data and then assume you know as much as the people who have been studying this for their whole lives.
This is very true.
Right. Okay, folks, we're out of time. We really should have a two-hour show on this, I know. Our email address, if you want to discuss this further with us, is oth@2600.com. We'll see you next week. More fun. Oh, what's this? Country music. Great. What a great way to go out.
We met in the chat room in America Online. My PC was slow, but you said it was fine. You've been filling my memory with data since then. My love is so large, I need a little more RAM. So fax me if you love me. Girl, please don't hit control alt delete. Now since I bought this computer, I've not left the house. All my friends are as close as a click of my mouse. We don't need a flesh meat for me to know how I feel. This digital love, well, it's virtually real. So fax me if you love me, send email if you care. Darling, if you need me, I'll free my software. Control Alt Delete. Girl, nothing can come between us. Well, except maybe a power outage or some sort of virus. So
fax me if you love me. Send email if you care. Darling, if you need me, I'll free my software. I am caught in your website, and the serpent's so sweet.
Girl, please don't hit it. Control all delete.